I'd heard about prostate cancer. Most men have. I even knew about the heightened risk for black men, which, when adjusted, means that it affects one in three of us. One in three. But this was only meant to happen to old men. Other men. That was until it happened to me. I couldn't make these stories up. These are the stories, the good, the bad, and the unbelievable about my prostate cancer journey. So strap yourself in and let's go. Episode 26, Superpowers, Part 1. I've known Dennis for years. We've never quite worked together, but he's a bit of a chip off the old block. He's actually quite funny, but I'm funnier. He is the Brad Pitt to my Denzel, only he is richer, but I'm prettier. He is 6 foot tall and some change, and I'm wisely going to leave it there. He's the sort of person, he's not going to tell a penguin that thinks it's a cat, that it's a cat. What he would do instead is say, okay then, let's see you climb up that wall. And pull up a chair with some popcorn and sit back and watch. I never knew he had prostate cancer until he approached me after the prostate cancer talk I did at work. I thought he might not be ready to share his story when I tentatively asked him if he was interested a few weeks later. He simply replied, when do you need it by? So, this is Dennis's story. My dad died when I was 30 and he was 71. At the time, it all seemed pretty sudden. He was diagnosed, he got worse, then worse still. And then he was gone. In reality, it was probably more like 18 months, but looking back across more than 20 years, it now seems a bit of a blur. At the end, he was absolutely riddled with cancer. His body emaciated and his brain was so affected that he looked at us, but just didn't know who we were. But the death certificate suggested that it probably started with prostate cancer. Born in 1926, he'd smoked for much of his life, and I guess at the time, I'd put the cancer down to that. He'd lost his sister a few years earlier to breast cancer. And some years later, his younger brother succumbed to prostate cancer as well. But they'd all smoked. Me? I've never smoked in my life, and I'm teetotal, so I assumed I was fine. Right? Now, I'm not saying I'm a saint. I'm more than a little partial to a bit of chocolate. And in my 20s and 30s, I probably put away enough fizzy drinks to sink a battleship. So I've been carrying a bit of extra weight for years. Large t-shirts gave way to extra large, then extra extra large, to the point where 3 times extra large was my go-to choice. It probably should have rung alarm bells, but I'm 6'1", so there's plenty of space to spread 17 stone around. And then in August 2017, I suddenly found myself needing to pee quite a lot. It had come on practically overnight. I'd go to the loo, but by the time I'd washed my hands, I felt like I needed to go again. Just a urinary tract infection, right? I tried to convince myself. I bought a crate of cranberry juice and figured, there you go, that'll fix it. A few weeks later, and while things were better, they still weren't right. So I gave in to my wife's incessant encouragement. And booked a doctor's appointment. I walked in, sat down and explained the symptoms. It only took her a few seconds and a drop of blood. You've got type 2 diabetes, she announced. That wasn't what I wanted to hear. But then, when you've had a diet that's consisted largely of sugar for decades, you can't really be surprised, can you? In some ways, it was a relief, I said to her. I explained about the family history of cancer and that it had always been in the back of my mind. She looked at me, overweight and just turned 50. Have you ever had your prostate checked? She asked. No, I said. Okay, I'll pop on the bed. A sharp snap of rubber glove. A squirt of lube. And a quick rummage. And she declared herself not concerned, but will do a few blood tests just to check you over. Get them done and come back in a couple of weeks for the results. I had the blood tests done on Friday. At 7 p.m. the following Monday, the phone rang at home. It was a surgery. You have got type 2 diabetes, they confirmed. And we want to put you on statin as you have high cholesterol too. But we're concerned about your PSA. It should be about 3. Yours is nearly 8. And with your family history, you qualify to see a consultant within 2 weeks. Would you like to do that? Sitting on the stairs on a Monday evening, with my dinner going cold, this was not a question I was expecting. Yes, please. Right, we'll get on with that. If you have any questions, ring the surgery tomorrow and look out for a letter. Have a good evening. I put the phone down and told my wife what they'd said. High PSA count, a bit concerned, should see a consultant. As you can imagine, I didn't sleep easy that night. The next day, I considered things afresh. Chances are it's nothing, a false alarm. To be honest, I was more worried about the diabetes. Once you've got diabetes, you've got diabetes. But prostate cancer? That's fixable, right? Fact is, I didn't really know. The next 2 weeks passed slowly. I had a letter that gave me a 9 a.m. appointment, but said, keep the day free, just in case. I'd spoken to my boss and explained why I was taking the day off, but played it down. Just being sure, I said. On the dot of 9 a.m, I was called into the consultant's room, and he asked me to run through what had brought me to the doctors in the first place. I related my tale, and for the second time I hopped up on the bed, hugged my knees, and thought of England. Now, if the GP had been trying to get to my prostate, the consultant was trying to reach me.
What the hell? Oh my God, no way,
My tonsils. Well, he declared, something doesn't quite feel right. I'd like an MRI scan. My experience of the NHS to date was that it works at a gradual pace. I mentally planned for another day off. They'll expect you downstairs at 10 a.m. Follow the signs and come back here at midday, he said. An MRI scanner is a big machine with a narrow tube running through it. My shoulders were squeezed and the top of the tube was about 2 inches from my face. I was feeling mildly claustrophobic, but fortunately they had to push me so far through the tube to scan my nether regions that my head just poked out the other end. The technician put a cannula in my hand, explained that they take some images, then inject me with some fluid and take some more. He then said the machine was really loud. He put some ear defenders on me and then walked off to start the procedure. The booming was indeed loud, and after about 10 minutes, I had the odd sensation of my arm going cold as the fluid ran in. 10 minutes later, and the platform I was lying on slid me out like Scott Tracy being loaded into Thunderbird 1. It wasn't worth me going home, so I went back upstairs to sit and wait for midday. Eventually, I got called back in, and the consultant was conferring with somebody else. They swiveled the screen around, and I looked at what I presumed was my prostate. I didn't fully grasp what they were saying, but it didn't sound great. So we'd like to do a biopsy. Are you free at 4 o'clock this afternoon? He asked. I couldn't think of anything else more important, so yes, I said, I could be free. Normally, you associate going into the operating theatre with masked figures, bleeping machines and a sterile, sci-fi-like environment with patients in those gowns that just don't close properly at the back. I walked in with my rucksack over my shoulder and was told I could leave it at the counter. I sat down and the chap who'd been talking to the consultant explained what he was about to do. You can't actually get to the prostate from the outside without opening you up. However, what you can do is to stick a needle in your rectum, go through the rectal wall and get to the prostate that way. Now, the rectum isn't the most hygienic of areas, so passing a needle through that carries a certain risk of infection. So we'll give you a large dose of antibiotic, he said, giving me the largest tablet I'd ever seen. And sign here. If you suffer any untoward symptoms in the next week or so, go straight to the hospital. Do not go to the GP and do not wait to see if you will improve. Hospital. You may have a blood infection. Nervously, I asked, how bad might it be then? He indicated the consent form again. But you'll be fine. Sign here. Looking back on the whole period of my treatment, the next half an hour was undoubtedly the worst part. And quite frankly, if that's as bad as it got, then I've got much to be thankful for. Lying on my side, shorts and boxer shorts around my ankles and hugging my knees, they started by giving me an anaesthetic. And I don't mean in my arm. Or my rump, I mean in there. And then, after 5 minutes for it to work, they take what I can only describe as feeling like a bicycle pump and poke it in where the sun doesn't shine. But this is a bicycle pump with a sharp pair of snips on the end, and I can feel tiny pieces of me being snipped off deep inside. Several times that day, I've tried to explain what it felt like. Normally, when someone sticks something sharp into you, it's your arm or your leg or your mouth, if you're at the dentist, and you can point to the site of the jab. But this was strange. This was just inside. 16 times they went in and came back out with a little bit more of my prostate. I know, because they were counting them off. And then it was done. When you're ready, hop up and get dressed. As I was signing the form earlier, the consultant had explained that the procedure would mean that I'd see blood in my urine for a few hours, in my stool for a day or so, and in my semen for about a month. But other than that, fatal blood infections aside, there shouldn't be any side effects. Then it was just a case of waiting for the results. It was about 10 days, but it felt like a lifetime. During that time, I did pee blood, but only for the rest of the day. And there was a bit of blood in the pan when I went to the loo. I was still sore, so I didn't really feel like investigating to see whether or not there were traces of blood in my semen. But eventually, curiosity won out, and strictly in the name of experimentation, let's just say it was a disturbing sight. And let's move swiftly on. To get my results, I went in to see a consultant oncologist who bizarrely had the same name as my first girlfriend. She'd been a plastic surgeon, but I hadn't seen her for 20 years. I wondered if she changed specialities. Turns out there's more than one G. Smith in the NHS. This Miss Smith didn't beat around the bush. As I sat down, she introduced herself and then said, well, 13 of the 16 samples that we took are cancerous. We'd recommend treatment. She ran through the options. It came down to radiotherapy or surgery. Bombard the cells with radiation or open me up and cut it out. However, should the radiotherapy not work, it would be likely to have caused a lot of internal scarring, which would make subsequent surgery far more difficult. In addition, it turns out that being zapped with radiation makes it increasingly likely that you'll develop some other cancer 20 years down the line. If you're 75, then there's a good chance that by 95, you'd either be past caring or wouldn't be around to care. At 50, though, I was rather hoping to be fit and healthy at 70. Surgery sounded like the sensible solution, not having been persuaded by the wait and see option. However, I did say I'd like to speak to somebody about the radiotherapy, just to be sure. An appointment was made, as was another appointment for a bone scan, just to make sure it hadn't spread. Speaking to the radiotherapy specialist, he basically repeated what I'd been told and recommended the surgery. That then was that. Meanwhile, because this had all started with what I thought was a urinary tract infection, somebody decided, just to be on the safe side, they wanted to take a look inside my bladder. So a few days later, and I'm back in a treatment room. By and large, if a doctor wants to look at your insides from the inside, then short of cutting you open, there are only three ways in. The biopsy had ticked one off. Looking at my bladder ticked off the second. And as it happens, thanks to an issue with my esophagus recently, where I had to have a camera down my throat, I've now completed the full set. By now, I'd got used to dropping my trousers in front of a room full of strangers. Some local anaesthetic cream was applied, and everything down there went numb. I focused on a TV screen over the bed, which suddenly went from showing a picture of the operating theatre to a picture of my insides. "We passed a troublesome prostate, really quite small," commented the consultant cameraman, and we carried on the journey to my bladder. "All looks fine," he declared, "but I'll write and confirm it." What he neglected to mention was, "Oh, by the way, when this anaesthetic wears off and you go to pee, it'll feel like a stream of razor blades for the next 24 hours. No. He left me to find that one out all by myself. Not long after that, I went for the bone scan. This was to determine whether the cancer in my prostate had spread anywhere else. The process involves injecting you with a radioactive substance, letting it percolate around your body for 2 hours, and then you are lying very still on the table while a machine takes the necessary images. The lady who gave me the injection unscrewed a lead canister and took out the tube. She looked at me as someone who has injected many overgrown teenagers with a radioactive marker and said, with a twinkle in her eye, "You're not going to get any superpowers, you know." Fast forward a couple of weeks, the bladder check had come back clear, and the radiation test had A, revealed nothing else untoward, and B, had not given me the ability to climb sheer walls, fly, or turn invisible. Damn. I reflected on what had happened recently. I hadn't even got to the surgery part yet, but by my rough estimate, every penny I'd ever paid in national insurance during 30-odd years worth of employment, I'd had back in terms of tests, scans, biopsies, and consultants' time. I will never begrudge the NHS a penny for as long as I live.